Recording in progress.
All right, we're going to start the Economic Development Committee meeting for 2022. We have in-house Mr. Alderman Funkhauser, Alderman Koch, staff. Any citizens' comments on the agenda? Anybody in Zoom land? Anybody? All right, moving on. Minutes for correction approval, April 5th, 2022.
No issues.
No issues.
All right, we're on new business. EDC 2022-24 billing permit report for March of 2022, Mr. Rados.
All right, in March, we ended up adding 151 permits were issued, 20 of them were single family detached homes, 15 commercial, and that brings the construction value for that were permitted was almost $9 million.
What did you say on the residential side? Sorry.
28 single family homes.
28 single family
homes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's where we're at for March.
Were they kind of spread out, or did you see a correlation of what areas of the city?
A lot of these were Rangeview Village. I think Lennar has a burning desire to finish that subdivision as soon as possible to go on to their next project from what their Jeff Peter was telling me the other day. So their demand is sky high.
Nice.
He said he's absolutely amazed. Even back in the last time their demand was on the size of his right now.
Really?
Three or four.
That's good news.
Yeah.
All right, anybody have any questions, comments, concerns? On a new business number two, EDC 2022-25 building inspection report for March of 2022. We're back to Mr. Rader's again.
All right, in March we ended up conducting 767 inspections. Of those 767, 201 of those inspections were outsourced by a third party contractor, and 566 were kept in house or with the fire department.
Did we have any of those? Was that any of those with the agreement of Campbell County to be doing anything in counties?
Those don't, we don't encompass those. Okay. I have been doing a lot more for Kendall County this last month. Unfortunately, their long-time plumbing inspector got diagnosed with throat cancer, and he's resigned his position from all the communities in our area, so they're looking for a replacement. I've done my best to put him in touch with some guys that are pretty good that have the liability insurance they need. So I talked to Brian today, and it looks like they'll hopefully have that under vote next week.
Okay.
So hopefully.
Very nice. Anybody have any questions? EDC 2022-26 property maintenance report. Back to you again.
All right. In March, the only case we actually heard before the hearing officer was motor vehicles on property. That one ended up being dismissed as the vehicles were removed. We did respond to a lot of a good deal of complaints, but only one of them rose to the necessity of writing a citation.
Any other questions, comments? EDC 2022-27, Economic Development Report for April 2022. Ms. Lynn.
So we have my report in front of you, and I guess the big exciting thing would be Noodles and Company coming to Yorkville. So, they are national brand. In the U.S., 10,000 employees, I believe, in 30 states. So they're going to be on 1,877 square feet. So they'll have indoor dining, they'll have takeout, and a drive pickup window. Not a drive-up, pickup. Same thing as Chipotle's doing. We're all going to order on our apps and then pick up through that pickup window. So it's a model that seems to be working for a lot of these quick casual little is what they're considering. They do not have alcohol, so it's like a Panera. Someone asked me that. No, they don't serve alcohol. Publicly traded company, and that building will now be 100% leased. It will just be two tenants in there. And the owner of Pet Supply Plus, George Lemon, is really excited about his expansion because he's going to remodel that space and put in these new ergonomically correct dog washes so people won't have to bend down so far, so they're going to wash their their doggies and then adding grooming. So it's going to be a great addition over there. Gerber Glass and Collision, because a couple people asked me about that, they had trouble actually finding a civil engineer because everybody's so busy. So I think that's what we're seeing with people. So everything's backed up. So, I don't know if anybody else has any other questions, but Williams Group is doing great. Their space is now 100% leased over on the river there, and hydraulic at 47. So Second Chance Cardiac is moving from the We Grow Kids building. The We Grow Kids building has been sold to the school district, or is being sold to the school district, and moving their early childhood program there. So they were a tenant there, so they're moving over into the Williams building. And so all very positive. Correct, they're going to be getting started shortly. And Dakota's, he started on Facebook. I saw today that they were starting to kind of do some cleanup in the space. So.
Where's it going?
Dakota's. Dakota's is going in the former Butcher Block 360 space.
Oh, so that's changing again.
Yeah. So, it was Casa Santiago.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Butcher Block 360. Those are the same people that owned it when it went from Casa Santiago to Butcher Block 360. So now this is Jonas and his group that is going to go in there and do Dakota's.
What is it going to be?
I would say, you know, they're kind of focusing on bourbons, and I think that's kind of one of the things that are very in right now, like a bourbon bar with food, you know,
okay.
Restaurant. So. And that's pretty much all that I have to report on, unless you have any other questions. So, Bell Tire, okay. I wish I had a nickel for every time I got a text about what's going next to Culver's. So, but I had people tell me they heard it was an Oliver.
Close.
Yeah, Bell Tire, Oliver, you know, kind of funny. So,
lots of rumors, nobody was ever right when they
asked. Right.
Yeah. It was like, I thought, like, I think the Bell Tire people should just put a sign up that says coming soon, Bell Tire, because, you know, it was like the question on the hour, and it was like, inquiry minds want to know.
As soon as the stakes went up, the survey stakes, then I started phone calls too.
Yeah. So.
Don't convey to Bell Tire the reaction that I get every time I have to tell somebody what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Oh, yeah. And I don't even know where Oliver would come from. That's kind of funny. So.
Wishful thinking.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people would tell you they would. I keep hearing Costco, Trader Joe's, a grocery store on the south side. I'm hearing all kinds of stuff that people want. So.
Yeah, those have been the same ones that they've wanted all along. And, you know, when I try to explain to people regarding Trader Joe's, Trader Joe's model in the Midwest is not like the model that they have in California. They're few and far between, and they're very urban in their choices of where they go. So. I mean, I've lived here since 1996, and the Trader Joe's that are closest to us are the same two Trader Joe's, the one in Naperville on Washington Street, and the one in Batavia. Same ones, you know. So it's not like they popped up on different spots. So, but if you know people that live in California, they're like all over. So that's why they have the Aldi's, because it's the same parent company that owns them.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, thank you. You're doing a great job. It's,
okay.
Yeah,
that's more
to awesome.
Too. So.
And I just wanted to recap that, because I think that there's a lot of great things coming to Yorkville, and a lot of people are really excited about it, so thank you for all you do. But Chipotle, that is coming. Bell Tire under construction, underway next to Culver's. Pet Supply Plus going through the remodel. Mm-hmm. And then Noodles & Company going right next to Pet Supply Plus. Mm-hmm. Is there any idea on when, if the remodel has to finish before they start?
They'll run independently, but you know, because they're two different, but they're in the same, they're going to be the same roof, you know, the same rooftop.
Yeah.
But they're going to, like, Pensacola Plus wants to have a rebrand opening. They want to make it, they want to make a big splash.
Awesome.
So, and then, and kids, you know, that's just down the road too, so
yeah,
you've got lots of stuff happening out there.
My kids are super excited about Noodles & Company. Then Crafted, that's awesome too. Mm-hmm. And then Fox's Dead Meadery, and then Iconic Coffee, which is going in that same building. So a lot of good stuff going downtown.
Yeah.
So awesome. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Yeah.
You guys have questions, comments? Thank you. All right. EDC 2022-28. PZC 2022-10, Microbrewery Brewpub Micro Winery Text Amendment.
All right, this one's going to be me. So I'll give a brief overview. This is a staff proposed text amendment to the zoning ordinance. Last month, you'll remember the liquor license code was amended that put brewpub, microbrewery, micro winery, winery all in the same class for a liquor code license. So staff originally was, we have regulations in the zoning code that cover those uses, where they're allowed, how they're defined. So staff is proposing some changes to the code to better align with the liquor license code. Also, to bring the numbers of total amount produced in line with state statute. So real quickly, the main, up over kind of the main changes, if you want to talk about the actual language, we can get afterwards some questions, but for the most part, the liquor license background code had three major changes. It combined all those uses into one for one easy license. It reduced, or it set the micro winery level, you're allowed to produce 50,000 gallons per year, and that is in line with state statute for state of Illinois. And then also it removed any requirement that it must be accessory to an existing restaurant. So there are a lot of uses now where really it's just, oh, we're a brewery, we sell our beer, maybe some blank snacks. I know there's some other places that you just get food trucks, or they have an open meeting area if you want to bring in your own food. So it's more accommodating to that. So the zoning ordinance currently, we have microbrewery group up defined as one, we have a micro distillery defined as one, and a micro winery defined as one. But then within the land use table, they're all put together and they're permitted in all business districts, and they're permitted in both manufacturing districts. This is also the situation with micro winery. We originally had 100,000 gallons per year, and as we go through, we'll see that's going to be reduced down to 50,000 per year to align both with the liquor code and the state statute. There were also a couple of special conditions. So off of section 10.10-6, where it says where these are permitted in one district, there are some special conditions. So within the definition and within the special conditions, microbreweries and brew pubs were both had to be ancillary to a restaurant use. And since we're changing that in the liquor code, we decided to split these two apart and change them here as well. Originally, when the language was adopted, I think going through the zoning code update back in the late 2000s, there was more of a concern like, you know, this is more of a manufacturing use, it should be part of a restaurant, whereas the uses over time have changed. Now they're pretty appropriate in commercial spaces, even if they don't have a restaurant. For tasting rooms, for small scale, you know, alcohol tasting, beer, wine. So the proposed text amendments is going to be Chapter 2, which is our definitions, and Chapter 6. Chapter 2, the definition, we're going to split out the brew pub, and that is still going to be a restaurant slash brewery. Very similar, you know, to a restaurant, but that will maybe have that component of being a brew house. And 155,000 gallons per year is going to stay the same. That's also in line with state statute currently, so we left that. We're combining microbrewery and microwinery into one, very similar like we did in the liquor code. And that has 155,000 gallons for beer and the 50,000 gallons for winery per year that can be made. And then we're leaving micro distillery above. That will be, is already sectioned out in there. So we're just going to keep it as is. So what we're going to do though, since we have those three different definitions now, we're going to separate them into table six into three different definitions. This is one of those things where we can discuss placement and districts they should be allowed in. We feel it's best to keep them separated, as in the future, if there's any amendments to be made, we won't have to split them apart. Say, oh, some people feel group pub is more appropriate here than here, or my distillery might not be appropriate here, and it'll just be a single line item change. Again, the special conditions in 10.6 will also highlight group pub will be ancillary to a restaurant, and then the microbreweries, wineries, and distilleries will have the same special regulations. These mostly call out just performance standards that you have to meet, if there's outdoor storage. What you have to do to mitigate that. So for the most part, staff is just recommending those changes to align everything together within our code through the different sections. We are planning on taking it to public hearing next Wednesday from PCC for that public hearing. And we are just as staff looking for recommendations or concerns from PCC to
Got any questions?
I've got two. In the brew pub special conditions, it says all sales must be in hand-capped sealed containers. The term hand-capped, is that a defined term somewhere?
It's not a defined term in our zoning ordinance, but a defined term from the Webster Dictionary or common usage of the word. We have it used as whatever the newest in the Merriam-Webster dictionary has came out. Are you concerned with what that could mean?
Okay, so with that, when I read it, my interpretation is it's not to be an automated mechanical system, it's to be basically a manual sealing of the box. You know, it's a manual machine, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely something we could change. So that language was existing from the previous adoption of it. We could remove hand cap and say it must be sealed.
Get rid of any
confusion.
What's the state statute say? Does it say sealed or does it say hand cap?
I would have to check that. I know the state statute had language on per gallon or things like that. I believe this was more so if you're doing retail sales of your bottles to make sure people aren't walking out of the containers.
Right. Yeah, because I think that's really the bottles that you take away, right? You don't finish a whole bottle, you can take the rest with. Those are probably sealed. Usually they give you a sleeve to put it in that's sealed, correct?
That definitely happens when I worked at a restaurant for wine. They used to seal it, we put it in a bag, and then the staff member would staple the receipt and said and sign it saying this is sealed. So then if you get pulled over and say yes, it's an open container, but
yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think we can just strike hand cap functionally at brewery, some of them are hand manually capping them, some of them are putting through automated machines.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And then the second question I had was regarding quantities. Is there any quantity limit to the aggregate of these three categories?
If someone wanted to do a brewery, distillery, and winery together?
No. In terms of the quantity of licenses for the class that we're creating, the M class micro brewery, pub, and micro winery. So the combination, the aggregate, is there a cap on how many of those?
The liquor licenses? No. Okay. There's none.
So these. We have to mention one under any of the three types.
This is specifically going over the land uses and the zoning code, so when someone comes in and gets a liquor license for a micro distillery or a micro brewery, and then it doesn't say you have to have a restaurant, but our zoning code does, we're trying to eliminate those kinds of problems.
Well, this is this vernacular attractive enough so if we had similar business coming in, they would want this, or is there anything that would be a negative that would deter them?
No, I mean, if anything, this makes it easier to open a business.
Perfect. Thank you. Any other questions?
Just one simple one. What's the process for monitoring? Because it sounds like if you're putting like so many gallons, how does that get? Does the state do that, or do we expect it, or how's that?
Yeah. I mean,
how do you know that?
The primary enforcement regulatory agency would be the state through their liquor licenses. So, and I'm not aware personally like what checks they do or anything. But there's an annual liquor license, that you have to get from the state and from the city. And the state is pretty strict with their liquor licensing rules. So whether it's every 3 or 4 years or if it's a self-certification, I don't know. But those capacity limits are pretty well defined throughout the entire state liquor code.
Okay, I was just curious how they know it's a community, unless you have to submit something.
Yeah, and for us, I mean, it probably will never come up after the fact. If it does, and somebody's violating it, it turns it into a giant macro brewery that may be an issue for reasons other than alcohol production. When there's so many cars showing up, or they don't fit the lane issues. So we would take a look at that at that point, but I doubt that that will ever come up.
I was just curious.
Good question. It says 155,000 gallons of beer. But mead, is that a type of beer? Does it matter?
Mead is technically a type of wine. So for our purposes, it's all the same language. It doesn't really matter. But in the alcohol field, technically it's a type of wine.
So we would hope that if they were doing really well and very successful, they've gotten north of that 50,000 gallon mark, that they would come to us and have to get a different liquor license. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, the state, to Ken's question, probably would be the first agency that would know and would care, and we probably would be second.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just imagining what I know about the three-tier distribution system and, distributors coming in and what they can sell, and my guess is there's probably some sort of, natural notification process that occurs when, somebody notices that they've done some procedures. So,
no other questions. Thank you, Jason. We appreciate it.
No problem.
Next up, EDC 2022-29, Future Land Use Change, South Haldimand Corridor Properties.
And this is me again, so I'll walk you through this one real quick. If you'll remember, this time last year, we were having discussions with the county about potentially changing future land uses along what will be south of the main road for US Highway Road, from the bridge going over the river and then following down all the way to Sagebrush Trail. We had discussions with them talking about potential. They have a lot of area in that as mixed use business, and a lot of ours is state residential. And it was just an open discussion to talk about. They invited Plano and us, Bill Brooks, to talk, hey, this is going to possibly change future land use in the area. This discussion, we change our maps altogether and additional match. So a couple highlights to remember. Elamain Road is actually our boundary with Plano for our boundary agreement. So our future land use plan is actually only goes so far as the side of Elkin Road all the way up from 30 all the way down to 71. So Plano is on the west side, Woodville's on the east side when it comes to future land use changes. And as I stated before, obviously the county plans for everything that's not already in the municipality. And I believe in the memo, there's kind of showing they have some more mixed use business there, and almost all of this is state residential for us. So there was conflicting views beforehand on what was going to go in this area. So when we talked last year, we brought it forward to city council with elected officials, and obviously we're open as this is a kind of a large change and it could bring different types of land uses down there. The original comprehensive plan really focused on our core. It focused on the unfinished subdivisions that we had, over the next 10 years. Now, we adopted that in 2016. The working time from that was 2014 to 2016. So it was really focusing on the previous 6 to 8 years, saying, big focus is let's finish out and get these subdivisions developed. Let's focus on the core and everything else, kind of make state residential placeholder, we'll see where we're at in 10 years. So the county actually started reaching out to property owners. That's just good planning practice. If you're thinking about changing future land use of somebody's property, it's a lot of farmland, it's rural residential, they may not want to be mixed use. So over the past several months, the county has been reaching out to the people in this area, mainly south of Fox River to the rail line. And not many owners were interested in converting to mixed use business. Probably wanted to wait and see what was going to come. There was one property owner who owns three parcels south of the railroad that he was interested in changing mixed use business. He actually owns the property south of there as well as already mixed use business. So I believe for him it was made sense to keep all his properties the same. Kent County actually, and I just got this information a couple hours ago, they took it to their planning board April 28th, and it was approved, and then yesterday they took it to their zoning board of appeals, and it was approved for recommendations as well. So this is not a mile and a half review, but it was something we wanted to keep everyone aware of. They're still thinking that that's going to be in the commercial uses down there. Staff is recommending to, obviously consider this, continue to look at the trends in that area, but we will be probably moving forward with a new comprehensive plan in the next few years to update. Comprehensive plans are typically have 10-year horizons. We're in a very different place than where we were in 2014-15. So it could lead to, while there might be mixed-use business, this could actually offer opportunities for more different types of uses down there that should be studied. We're just looking for comments to give back to the county, if any. And then this is also going to Planning and Zoning Commission for review in June. And we can bring it back and forth to City Council at the end of June. So everybody's comments will be known. And how we want to contact the county, if we want to at all, or if there's direction from elected official if we want to do something as well.
I have one question. Did you guys reach out to the individual homeowners that live in those areas?
So Kendall County, since they were the one proposing the change to their comprehensive future land use map, reached out, and the attachment said that they reached out in October, November, December, February, March to many of the owners in that area, specifically called and mailed to see if they had any interest.
Okay. Do we have any of that feedback, or can we find it?
I can definitely contact the senior planner, Kendall County. He had a brief saying that I did call him and ask him, were people interested, or did you not get any feedback or hear back from them? And said, we got responses from everybody. The only person that wanted to change was one of those three persons. So I can ask him how many people he had to contact.
Okay.
And I can get that information to him.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Jason. I appreciate your update.
Yep.
Moving down the agenda. This is what we've been waiting for. Old business number one. Urban Chickens, EDC 2022-32 has resurfaced.
Yeah, I just to clarify what's in the packet, the last time everybody had talked about this was last year, at some point or another. So we've just included all the materials for that last meeting. So we don't have anything new research-wise, proposal-wise, but Chris had asked for it on the agenda, so we threw it on the agenda. provide the materials. Figured we'd go from there.
So I wanted to put this on here. I have continued interest from residents who would like to see this put back on for consideration, and actually have this put into the ordinances. I know the last time we did discuss this, as the memo describes, we had discussion at length and it ended without any action. I'm hoping that we can have discussion and actually move something forward. I know from our last one, the way we kind of had been moving forward was it was going to be limited to large lots and some pretty hefty restrictions on the ordinance. I'd kind of like to get rid of that last part of it and go back to what some of the staff had done in terms of research. They did a lot of really good research in terms of what some of the other communities have done, what's been successful, what's not. There's a lot of good information in our tactics. What I'd like to do is try to come up with a reasonable type of an ordinance that allows a majority of our residents, if they should choose, to be able to have urban chickens with reasonable setbacks of the coop relative to other properties, such as using the same setbacks for the coop as an accessory structure. So your shed, you know, you can't be 5 feet from the property, or you have to be 5 feet from the property line, you can't be any easement close to the fence. And then allowing them to be able to be up to the fences of your property as long as your fence, chicken wire, those kind of things. Things that are reasonable, responsible for having urban chickens. I mean, I don't want it to be Wild West, but I want it to be reasonable, you know, considerate of neighbors, but also flexible where it's not overburdened government reach on your property for what you want to do. So that's what I want to just kind of have a discussion on. See if there's interest in being able to move this forward and looking at a new draft of an ordinance.
All right. So I got two questions. I'm not saying I'm against this by any means. I'm open to hearing everything. But how many people did you have reach out to you so we have an idea of what we're looking at? I haven't had anybody since this started. So that's number one. And then number two, what's your ideal situation? Like, are you talking about your subdivision live in? Are people looking at that area so then we have an idea of what we're looking at? Or are we talking like downtown type lots? Or what are we looking at?
The ones that reach out to me, there's about a handful of them.
Okay.
Same ones that reached out to me over a year ago about this.
Yeah.
And they are dispersed across the city. There's no one particular place.
Okay.
Some of them are on a day lot, some are on a small lot. So we're
sure.
When I say small lot, standard city size like that. So there's no rhyme or reason to it. No, you know, I've got 2 acres, I won't be able to have it. You know, there is one that has it. You know, but there's also some that I'm on a city lot. Can I do it? Why can't I do it? So, but it is widespread in terms of where they're located. It's not just one geographic area.
Right. I think we kind of narrowed it down last time that with so many new subdivisions that are out there being new within the last 20 years, most of the HOA covenants and DEX bylaws will stipulate that you cannot have chickens. So that kind of narrows it down even more to what areas you can't have it. So,
That's a great point because the list in the packet that was provided, a survey of 28 different HOAs, I think was pretty much split 50-50 almost of neighborhoods that were outright prohibited by their covenants and declarations, and then there are others that hadn't stipulated that. However, if you have an HOA, even if you don't have a restriction, they could quickly or easily put one in place to restrict it. So that's an extra layer of restrictions.
Right. They could amend the DEX and bylaws to
accommodate
or not.
So piggyback on that, I do know I have 2 HOAs that want a heads up because they will do a that language in place. They don't have it now.
But if it was considered, they would do it.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. I mean, that's up to the voting membership of their HOA to do that. So it's their right to protect their neighborhood if that's what they feel is in the best interest. I just think from the city side, open it up and let it be allowed. And if you can do it, so be it.
And I think some of them might even stipulate, I mean, there's so many different types of bylaws throughout San Illinois, but some of them might stipulate that you may not be able to have breeding animals, so you'd have to stipulate this is for a source of food and not breeding chickens.
Right. And I think our ordinance actually, the draft did have it in it. There were no roosters allowed. If you did have a rooster, you had to remove it, but it was for, you know, this harvesting, as you could actually use the chickens for a meat source if they supposed to be.
Yeah, permitted up to 4 months of age, I think is what we had in there for roosters.
Mm-hmm.
So, are you asking to change the lot sizes or just the boundary lines?
Both. From what was proposed, I never liked that language because that language was for 1 acre lots, and it had a 25-foot setback for everything on the property. But on a 1 acre lot, that's not a bad issue, you know, because you're talking about 43,000 square feet. Take 25 feet from all sides, you still have a decent size of area. If you take a standard city lot that's 8 feet wide, you take out 25 feet onto your sides of the 30-foot section. So it's not really reasonable. So I want to readdress the size of lots and the actual setbacks. Because I'll be very clear, I do not want chickens on attached properties. So not on townhomes and not on duplexes. I don't think that's fair to someone that's in a, you know, multi-tenant type of a building to have domestic urban chickens on that property. So it's limited to just single family detached properties.
The only properties I can think of that would maybe be, could be on a smaller lot, would be the old part of town.
Right.
I got a whole bunch over there behind me in my ward that they're quite small lots to be, if you're going to, how much are you going to reduce it?
Well, I think what Fox Hill doesn't have an HOA, right? So technically, they could be in the run for it.
Right, and their Fox Hill is standard lots. They're 10 to 12,000 square foot lots throughout that community for the most part. And it's something we could put in a, you know, if you're going to have so many chickens up to the, you know, maybe we set a max of 6 chickens, 8 chickens, you have to have so many square feet on your lots in order to have it. So if you had a 4,000 square foot lot, two chickens. You know, it's something to work that because I wouldn't want to prohibit all lots. I think when we looked at the chart that's on here, it was a chart that went through the sizes of all the lots we broke up. The R2 had 6,358 parcels throughout the city. And then the R2D, which are the duplexes, were 207. Like I said, I wouldn't want to do duplexes. But that gets in, the R2 gets into the smallest ones because those are some that were the non-conforming small lots in the downtown those kind of areas. It's something everybody's not about. But yeah, generally I just like to try and get it permissible throughout most of the lots as long as we're being reasonable and considerate to neighbors.
So I would say based on some of the digging that I did the last time this came up, some of the comments I heard from homeowners were yes, but only if they had a privacy fence and then limited to how many, that type of thing. People that had them, I heard people say, you know, in different towns that actually permitted. I heard that yes, there's a privacy fence. They tend to get a little smelly from time to time. Now, they couldn't decipher with privacy fence if that's the feces or if that's dead chickens and they're not properly being maintained. They get that smell. There was some noise. They don't think there's roosters, but they got a little bit loud because they had other animals running around with them out there. So you heard a little bit about that. So I don't know if you want to put in stipulations on privacy fence. Well, just something out there, because I know you said, you know, chicken wire, but then the neighbor's dog, you had to worry about that.
I'm definitely for that.
What I would say is
solid fence.
Well, solid fence, or even if you have your standard four-inch picket, you know, you're open, four-inch open. If you have the chicken fence on that, in order, because you got a fence, but you have the chicken wire, so that's going to be a physical separation, generally speaking. What I was thinking.
But if it's open, they can see.
They can
see. The dog is going to run, that dog can run up and down, bark at those chickens.
It's the noisy
ones.
That's the noisy.
If you know you have a noisy neighbor dog, you may not consider it as well. That's part of it. But I wouldn't be opposed to considering some type of requirement on fencing. You know, whether it is your yard has to be fenced, or if your yard is not fenced, you have to have an enclosure on your lot that actually is fully enclosed so that you can't get to the property. So instead of making somebody fence in their entire airport, maybe they just have to fence in a certain area that meets the square footage required for chickens to be reasonable and rational. Maybe kind of compromising. So, yeah. But it could be, yeah, maybe the, there's a requirement for solid fencing.
Yeah, I'm just like Ken said, I'm thinking about dogs running back and forth and barking and chickens running around.
My neighbor, for example, I would have chickens maybe, but they have two bird dogs. And I guarantee you those bird dogs would be up and down that fence so they can see those chickens. And the hope is one doesn't get out at the other because the bird dog, the chicken would be gone.
Right.
Did that fire somewhere?
Right.
And I do know someone in Batavia, like a Batavia officer.
Sandwich does too.
Yeah, and the funny part is the guy works at the lab with me, he had four. And they let them out in the yard a little bit, out of the coop, and they went in the house for like 5 minutes. There was a hawk sitting up in the tree, in the neighbor's tree. They wanted to get a gun out and shoot because the hawk took out two chickens. This guy wanted to get a gun out. I'm like, can't do that. I go, how you kidding? That's just the luck of the draw. You should have never left them out alone.
Well, and we've got eagles flying around here all the time now.
I'm more worried about some yahoo getting mad about it because they lost me because of it and then taking matches and everything.
You got that issue with everything. I mean, think about it. Dogs, I got dogs that run behind my fence and irritate my dog. They all bark at each other. Mm-hmm. We've heard of these stories where homeowner gets upset because their dog's got in a fight and shoots the other dog. Right? You can't hurt.
We had a hard time here not that long ago.
Yeah.
Over on a plane.
So it happens. We can't prevent stupid in every instance, but, you know. Reasonable and rational. That's all I can say.
That makes sense. Any other questions, comments, concerns? Bart, do you have anything with this?
Not specifically. So is there a specific tailor to the proposal, or just, you know, we want to have a discussion, or what's the outcome?
We want to kind of pass through some of the, you know, maybe look at the standard size lots, you know, take out the 1 acre, maximum of 4 or 6 chickens, and then carve out some language about if you're, you know, fencing for the property. If you're fencing, if you have fencing on your property, or you're going to install fencing, then you can actually have a much larger area. But if you have no fencing, don't want to put it in, you just have to create a tent, basically, for your chickens, something of the sort, and see kind of what we come up with for performance standards.
So there's no restriction at all then with the lot size at all, so you could have a tiny, tiny lot.
Well, that's what I'm thinking is maybe if you're going to do that, you have a restriction to how many chickens you can have. You can't have the max, but maybe you can have 2 or 3.
I'm thinking if you're on a small lot, it doesn't matter if you've got 2 or 4.
Do we have do we know how many lots are under? Say 4,000 or about under 5,000 square feet.
I thought that we had ran one of the numbers at some point or other. I don't remember off the top of my head.
We have 12,000 and 10,000 listed in the code.
We do not have that information. We've had to adjust that information because lots have been reported since the time that that menu, that memo was sent out. So we would have to update the chart. And it seems like we're leaning more towards the moderate regulations that were in the chart, with a little bit of reduction in lot size. So staff can look into that and get you additional information for next month's meeting.
Yeah, so if Chris can break that down, and I agree, the moderate is probably a little more in line. If you're looking at the PDF 145, that's the middle line, takes out the R2D. And then it's got some lot size requirements. This is something that I think this one had the minimum lot size 12,000. That maybe you want to go a little less than that, whether it's 10 or 8,000. But that might give you a little more comfort, Ken.
In the 8,000, you know,
where the lot has to be. Well, I wouldn't mind seeing a map of where the small lots are located. You know, if we can break them out. Give her 2,000 or 3,000 and just show where those lots are.
Well, like a heat map of the lot sizes?
Yeah. If it's possible to do something like that.
Yeah, Jason and Christy, is that possible with our GIS data?
That can be done.
Okay.
Because then maybe we hold on the lot size pin, and we kind of get an idea of where the smallest lots are and how many. Because if there aren't that many, then maybe it's not as much of an issue for us.
Yeah, we can prepare that map and bring it back next month if you want us to.
Okay.
Perfect. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you, Jason and Christy. All right. Any additional business? We don't have any additional business. Citizens' comments? So with that, I will conclude the meeting at 6:46:33. We are adjourned. Thank you.
Very good.
Yeah, it's something.